This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we'll get into the weather and surviving all of that and all kinds of interesting stuff. Show prep today was just loads of fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. But we're going to jump right in because we have a special guest on the phone. Hunter, you and I have talked about this poll a couple of times. We had a pretty in-depth conversation about some of what it was looking at on last week's show with Jeff Reynolds. I want to welcome to the show radio host of the I Spy radio show that airs right here on our air, KYKN, Mark Anderson, who put together this very interesting poll, Predict Oregon. Mark, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this poll was really interesting. And so you've got the results. It was there for, you know, a set amount of time. So break it down, kind of, number one, why you decided to do this. And then let's break down the numbers of the findings. It's very interesting.
Sure. And you know, even I got results I was not even remotely expecting.
Really?
I was expecting some things that weren't terribly surprising, but it was kind of a shock on some of them. As far as the origins of this poll, as more and more Republicans started entering the race, I began to have flashbacks to the last time that Christine Drazen ran, and she had 19, 20, maybe 22 people that she was running against. Mm-hmm. And she emerged from that primary with only 22%, which means 78% of people voted against her.
Yeah.
And at that point, she was never going to consolidate the base. People were always going to be upset. And even now, I keep seeing comments on social media, I will never vote for her. And so as more and more people started to enter, I thought, how can we prevent this? And where would the votes go if she wasn't in the race and so on and so forth? And so I kind of started hashing some things around. But then as I also got thinking about it, it occurred to me that maybe Chris Dudley is not best served here in this particular race. And so this poll was not only asking about the governor's race and the primary, but also, what if Dudley was to move over to the U.S. Senate? He's running against Jeff the Potato Merkley, as I like to think of him. That's his personality. He could do really well. Dudley's got the name recognition. He's got that immediate star power that would immediately put him at least on par with Merkley, and I think he's got a much better personality, and people know him more, and it's like, oh, yeah, that guy from the Blazers, that'd be awesome. So I think he could have done there. And so I was asking the question, okay, well, what do you think about that? And then also, how do you think he would compare against the other current candidates? And unfortunately, David Brock Smith entered the race the day after the poll had launched, so I wasn't able to capture that sentiment. Mm-hmm. So that was the origins of it, mainly to focus. The real key reason I did the poll was, let's see where the votes go, who is stealing votes from whom, and what would happen if you remove some of those. And I was really shocked to see that Deal not only won that question, but overwhelmingly so.
Yeah.
And I am rather disappointed that the draft Chris Dudley campaign did not work. I was able to get it in front of him. I sent it to one of his campaign staff, but then a secondary source allegedly got it up to Phil Knight. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that was that's what I've heard. Mm-hmm. But it's really too bad, because when you look at the data, especially on the Chris Dudley side, it wasn't just saying that he'd do well. I mean, it was screaming that he should enter that race. It was just overwhelming. And just real quick here, let me grab these numbers. 76.4% of Republicans said a Dudley Senate run is good or great idea. And only 7% were opposed to that. And then also, because non-Republicans could weigh in on both the Senate and the general race against Kotech, 71% of NEVs said that would be a very competitive race between he and Merkley. 86.5% of Republicans said they would vote for Dudley in a Senate primary, and only 2% said they would not vote for Dudley. So, again, it was just overwhelming that he should have run. He should have taken the shot rather than continue dribbling around half court. From what I'm seeing in these numbers, Dudley's not nearly as competitive as I was expecting. I really thought that I would be seeing a pretty much an even split between Dudley and Deal, and Drazen kind of leaking ahead a little bit. Mm-hmm. That was not what the numbers showed at all. And, you know, just stop me if you want to zero in on anything, but as far as a deal in just the headline number, 66.4% of people across seven independent measures say that deal is the best choice.
And then you'd think that would be more powerful, you know, in the Valley, sort of Albany, Corvallis, where the numbers do show that he was, because most of the respondents came from this area. But did he break out statewide? Because he's got momentum and name recognition now with everything. So do you think that played a factor in really kind of juicing him up?
I think it did, because if you because one of the questions we asked of respondents is, mm-hmm. you know, what's your zip code? And there were 230 unique zip codes, and they covered all, seven major areas, major regions. Mm-hmm. And so it was very much a statewide poll. I forget the exact numbers where they came from, but they did come predominantly from the Willamette Valley and Portland area.
Yeah, Salem, Albany, Corvallis, and then Beaverton, Hillsdale, Tigard, followed by Eugene, Cottage Grove, and Roseburg.
Yes.
Kind of were the top three.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, obviously he represents HD 17 right now, so he's well known within that demographic. But I think the statewide, the push with the gas tax, because that crossed out of partisanship. That got into nonpartisan, ticked off taxpayer territory.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that right there is the key point, because the whole point of a primary is different than a general election.
Yeah.
In a general election, you're always voting for who you want in that office.
Mm-hmm.
It's different, though, in a primary race, because it's like you're the coach of a football team. Mm-hmm. You're not picking your personal favorite, that kid that you really, really like. Instead, you're picking who you think is best suited to beat the other team. That's the difference. It's a strategic vote. It is not a personality vote. It's not a personal preference vote. That happens in the general. But in the primary, you have to put the best person on the field that you possibly can. And that's where I think Ed Diehl, personally, that's where I think Ed Diehl has the best advantage, because he was able to pick an issue that reached across the aisle. When I've talked to Ed in the past, I interviewed him on the show a couple times about the no gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
A third of the people that signed that were not Republicans.
Yeah,
they had Democrats. They had NEVs. In fact, there were a number of people that specifically said, "Look, I'm not an NEV, I'm not a Republican, but I'm signing this because I'm so tired of Democrats trying to steal our money. It's hard enough."
Yeah. So let me ask you, Mark, you know, because, again, you've been around Oregon politics for a long time, as have Hunter and I, even just 2022, you know, you're talking about you're looking at it like a coach and you want to be strategic. Doesn't feel like that's kind of been the pattern in the past elections. It's been more, well, I really, really like this person, so I'm going to vote for them. But then I probably will support who comes out of the primary, or maybe not. So are you hoping and maybe seeing a little more strategy here coming into the 2026 primary?
I am seeing some of that. It's amazing how when you post in some of these social media groups, and I've said that same thing, is that a primary vote is very different than a general. People get very angry just even mentioning that. The principal got us, you know, this person and that person.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that's not how you need to look at it. You need to pull yourself back from that. This is an objective, not a subjective vote, where you really have to say, okay, what are the key points for our guy or girl versus their team? And the other issue, too, that I think will play really well in the general in the general election in November is there are going to be so many issues either directly on that ballot or indirectly. I still think the no gas tax is likely to end up on the November ballot, just because time is running out to get that on there. So I think it's going to end up being there by default,
even with the ruling from the Marion County judge.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I know
it'll be challenged. It'll be challenged in federal court, and of course they'll have, you know, get that through. But even if it's not directly on the ballot, it will be there indirectly, and it will be you will see that voter pamphlet peppered with statements talking about this person voted for the gas tax. This person voted for the gas tax. You're paying more gas because of this Democrat that voted for it. And the Democrats really, you know, you would think that with a name like Democrat, they would sort of like democracy. They would sort of like to hear from people. And people have been overwhelmingly opposed to this gas tax, and they are shoving it through, rather than saying, maybe we ought to cut back somewhere. Is there any program that we have that maybe we don't quite need? It'd be nice to have, but maybe we shouldn't. I've never seen an election cycle where Democrats have been ravenous for money.
Yeah.
They always want to spend more than what we can afford. But This has just been insane.
Yeah.
The amount, just that hunger for other people's money.
Yeah, and sort of like unabashed, and they're not even really trying to temper it or hide it. It's just right out there. Give me your money.
Yeah.
Real quick before we run out of time with you, were there any other surprises for you? You kind of break down, because obviously those in our listening audience are very well familiar with Daniel Bethel. David Medina is another one out there. He's got sort of the social media angle on things. Any other things kind of pop up for you that were like, huh, that's interesting?
Well, before we get there, real quick, it was not surprising to me that Christine Drazen had some. She led the pack in terms of negative reactions. In fact, she got almost 6% of people that said they would not vote for her at all. And also unfavorable at 38.6%. David Medina and Danielle both surprised me a little bit. I was actually expecting David to come in fourth. He came in second, but way behind to deal 66%. He got just under 9%. And also Danielle was a real surprise. She's been in the race the longest, about a year by now.
Yeah.
She had a very high favorability, but she actually came in last of these candidates.
Yeah. I don't know whether filing that early had anything to do with it, but you'd think maybe with name recognition, but that's the hardest part. And again, Oregon is a huge state. It's demographically diverse, geographically diverse. It's hard to campaign in Oregon. That's why it always seems like Portland, the I-5 corridor, rules the roost. I think it's valuable for people to look at. And again, you really break down the methodology, and I will link to it. Anything else before we let you go, Mark, that you want to make sure people know, or any words of wisdom as we head into the primary?
I think if people, I guess the other thing that was really encouraging to me is that everybody was highly motivated to weigh in on this. It had an 86.4%, I think, completion rate. That's very high for these types of polls. It's almost three and a half, almost four times what a normal completion rate would be. I think that says that we've got an engaged electorate, and so I'm taking that to heart. I think all candidates can take that to heart. Now they just have to go out there and work hard to get those votes.
And I'm glad, and again, it's predictoregon.com, and I think you're right, and people, and I know when I saw this, I'm like, good, people are asking questions, because I think a lot of Oregonians feel downright ignored and abused, especially by the Democrat Party, and so to be able to get asked their opinion. Are you going to do any more? I know that's the one you've got. Are you gearing up for anything else?
I will be doing some more. I did do the Senate poll as well. That was part of this one. I will release that. I had done an overview for the deadly campaign for internal use only type thing, just so that they could see the numbers. But I will do a public-facing one for that. I will definitely do a new one now that Deadly has decided no. I will be doing a single one on that, and then probably at a few more weeks. We'll do another governor one. If you go to that predictoregon.com, there's a little link at the bottom there. Just go to results@predictoregon.com if you want to just send the email direct, and you can get copies of these public-facing documents. Happy to do that. You can also let me know that you'd like to be notified of upcoming polls as well.
Perfect. And again, like I said, I'll link up in show notes. And again, just as a reminder, if Mark's voice sounds familiar, he is on our air on iSpy Radio Saturdays, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Saturdays 9 to 10.
Yeah. I listen. I do. I tune in. Mark, always great to have you. Thank you for doing this. I think you've done a good service, and we appreciate you gathering the data and making this available to voters in Oregon.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. If I sound a little hyper, it's because I've been surviving on caffeine.
I
just finished another cup of coffee, so that's like three for the day.
Well, God bless you, Mark. Thanks for the work you do. We appreciate it very much.
All right. And Oregon deserves a winner. We've got to win this time.
Amen.
Otherwise, we will not survive another 4 years.
No.
Amen. Amen. Your lips to God's ears, my friend. Okay, we're going to take our first break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Pearl and Mill and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty. Again, great to talk to Mark from iSpy Radio. Mark's show, he does a little bit more of a deep dive on subjects on Saturday. And so that's always a good listen. He has some interesting guests and interesting perspectives. So again, predictoregon.com, the results of the polls. So yeah, you had some interesting comments just before we went back on air, because some of what he was laying out, especially about Christine Drazen, isn't necessarily surprising, but I think the amount of number, the way it shakes out, is a little surprising.
Well, I sit here and go, okay, so in 2022, what do we know? Kate Brown wasn't running for re-election, so the seat was open. There was not an incumbent sitting there.
Right.
On the left side, there was two candidates. If you listen to the news, there was like 15 or 17 or whatever the real number was. But on the Republican side, there was 19. And I think six or seven of them really kind of gained some notoriety and traction. But each of them kind of put their flag in the ground and had their own little camp. There wasn't a feeling that, you know, there was any crossover. It was like, I'm in this for me. If I don't get it, you know, to hell with the rest of you. And once Christine Drazen won with just 22%, as he mentioned,
right,
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
About half of them literally took their flag and their ball and went home and brought all of their supporters with them and said, don't vote for her.
Right.
And then, of course, he threw Betsy Johnson into the mix. And now all of a sudden you see the outcome that happened. The other element, I think a lot of people that kind of, whether they voted for Drazen out of excitement or gritted their teeth and bared it and said, we're going to vote for Drazen because she's better than Kotek. I think a lot of them were disappointed when we had a very tight race and they hadn't called it. Numbers were still coming in and she went ahead and conceded.
Yeah, I was at the convention center that night because I was poised to get, because I was going to be on with Todd Starnes that night. And you could feel it. It was visibly like the air kind of left the room and it was like, what?
Yeah.
And of course then Measure 114 won that night too. And it was, and Mark was right talking about the base didn't coalesce. And I want to echo what he said about having some strategy when you're voting. And I think that would be great messaging coming from the ORP and the county parties about make this a strategic vote. It isn't necessarily about, you know, who your friend is or it's who can win in the general. He also didn't mention, because I think it was yesterday, Phil Knight just made a gigantic donation to the Dudley campaign. Mm-hmm. And I thought the numbers were interesting, that how well Dudley would have gone had he shifted over to the to beat the potato. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Jeff Merkley.
And I think that's the forgotten thing. Everyone's interested in the governor's race here.
Right.
But at the same time, if we can, you know, potentially flip a Democrat representative at the federal level to a Republican, what a huge message that sends to the rest of the country. And realistically, Chris Dudley, with his name recognition, with the money that he can raise from the likes of a Phil Knight,
right?
I'm sitting there going, what a bonus that would have been to be able to have him potentially unseat Merkley, or at least make it close enough that Merkley has to spend a lot of money to stay in that seat.
Yeah, because we really haven't presented for either Wyden or Merkley. We haven't presented any real serious challenges that stood. I don't even think they were barely a blip on their radar. Mm-hmm. That it's like, a Dudley challenge would be formidable. Absolutely.
Yep.
But it sounds like that's a no-go.
Yeah. And that's, and to the credit of the Republicans running, and let's take just the top five candidates, because there are 15 names on this list. The feeling I have had so far, and it's very early in the process, as we all know, has been that they're not separating themselves and creating this little division amongst, if you support me, you can't support that kind of mentality. I haven't seen that yet from a Dudley or Drazen or Ed Deal or Daniel Bethel or even David Medina. It's kind of, the messaging has been, we need to win. I think I'm the best person, but if I'm not, we're not going to, take our ball and go home. And I appreciate that thus far.
You're right. You know, we haven't really seen that. And so hopefully that will, after the primary and whoever comes out on top of that, which, you know, based on these numbers, and again, this is this is one poll. I really think the Deal campaign is leveraging the gas tax in a very smart way. I don't know whether Danielle getting into the race as early as she did was helped. Mm-hmm. Necessarily, and all of that is name recognition. And I know she's been in office for a while. David Medina has never held office. Obviously, Chris Dudley never has either. But he's got that sort of that celebrity star power, which, and he's so tall. I've seen some pictures. Oh, yeah. The dude is tall. This well, one woman looks like a hobbit next to him.
That's how you play in the NBA. You got to have a little bit of height.
I know,
that's why I didn't make it. Come on.
I looked at this one picture, and I'm like, that can't be real. She can't be that tiny, but she really was. So again, I really encourage people to go look at this. I hope he does more polling. And I think he's right, too, in talking about that there was the follow-through rate and the finishing of it, because people really do want to be heard. And so many Oregonians feel silenced and sidelined and crapped on and ignored.
Well, we've said that the biggest beneficiary from this potential of moving the gas tax referendum up to May has got to be a deal, because if he can run on both him running for governor and his participation in making this thing happen as quickly as it did, and his frustration with the Democrats playing games with it, I think that benefits him a lot across the whole state, because it's a message that not only can resonate with the Republicans, but also the Democrats and the NAVs that are frustrated at how much we're taxed in this state.
Makes me kind of wish we had a lieutenant governor position in Oregon, because any number of these other people would be great. It'd be nice to see Danielle in there with all that great executive experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just a wish. Yeah. When you wish upon a star.
That's the way Oregon is. It's, you know, they don't put a lieutenant governor out there. They just, you know, appoint people to commissions to take everything out and, right. You know, take responsibility away from the governor, you know. Whatever they can do to cover for the Democrat leadership in the state, they seem to do real well at that.
All right. Well, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour, and we're also hitting an anniversary, a milestone that makes me feel kind of ill. So we'll talk about that on the other side. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Okay, so I don't know about you, but my timeline on my social media is filled with 6 years ago today. 6 years ago today, I was recovering from some surgery that I had on my foot. And I'd headed back to the offices and was geared up and ready to go back to work, only to be like, nope, take your tablet and go home. 6 years ago, COVID hit.
Yeah, it shut down the world. And I sit here and go, I actually mentioned it to Jeff before we went on the air.
Yeah.
And he goes, I remember it so well. 6 years ago today, he was in Las Vegas for the Pac-12 basketball tournament. He was getting ready to go to the Oregon men's against the Oregon State Duck or the Beavers and they said, nope, we're done. We're not playing another game. Pack your bags and go home. And he said he was probably lucky to get home at that point.
Right, right. It was crazy. And it was supposed to be 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And it ended up being like 754 days to flatten the curve. I've got a couple things. It was to me, and we know this now looking back, it was the greatest psychological operation of our time. They convinced the planet that the flu had just disappeared and there was this new virus. And it was a lung eater. Remember all the fear? And I remember early on being frightened of it. I didn't know what it was. We didn't know what it was. We were kind of scared, but it was this, it had a 97% cure rate, but it was killing everybody. And all of a sudden it was supposed to be, remember there were the emergency medical ships in New York and the hospitals. And then all of a sudden, and then the freaking dancing nurses. Oh my God.
Well, you gotta really start off the bat, because they did such a great job. I mean, I remember watching the news reports when they're talking about this thing in China. And these were deaths in this community and this and that. But there's not a lot of worry. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's been a case here. But there still wasn't a lot of worry.
And do you remember Nancy Pelosi going to Chinatown?
Yeah.
In New York City?
To show how safe it was?
Hugging people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and then all of a sudden I think someone in a leadership position said, we can use this. And all of a sudden, the switch just flipped overnight. And the next day, it's like, this is the most deadly thing to ever happen. You have to do this and this and this. Don't leave your house. And all of a sudden, the fear porn ranked up so much that now all of a sudden, my wife's out buying a $75 jug gallon of hand sanitizer online because you can't get it in the stores.
Right. And then, you know, for a while there, it was like, well, don't be buying masks. The medical professional need that. And then all of a sudden, that flipped That switch flipped. And then, of course, we had to see flipping Fauci everywhere, that little ghoul, and Deborah Birx and her dopey scarves. And, you know, we had to see the press conferences. And, you know, and I'm not a fan of how Trump handled all of this. I'm not a fan of Operation Warp Speed, because now what we know now about the vaccines and, of course, the pushing of that and the propaganda being pushed at everybody constantly through mainstream media, the shaming, the public shaming, the turning people against each other, the narking on your neighbors.
Well, I just sit here and I go, you know, I reached a point where I looked at it, I said, okay, so we have this disease going around that, like you said, 97% cure rate.
Yep.
Very few people. And it was really the old and the sickly.
Yep.
Those pre-existing conditions are where people pass away. And a lot of it wasn't until they ended up on a ventilator. And I said,
pump full of remdesivir.
And I sat here and I said, well, we should be really excited because there's this disease going around that has eradicated the flu, because there was no flu at that point. And the flu affects, kills children. It kills young adults. It kills adults. It kills elderly. So I'm going, so now we have taken something, we've eradicated the flu, and now there's just this thing. And I'm kind of going, it was facetious. It was a joke, because I knew that a lot of these were actually just the flu. And people overreacting, the sickness of literally the news celebrating the death of a young person.
Yeah, right. Because it fit the narrative.
And then, of course, they literally turned on the unvaccinated, the people that weren't going along. Mm-hmm. You were public enemy number one.
Yep.
You know, six people at Thanksgiving. If you had a seventh, your neighbors should have called this helpline and have the police show up. And I sit here, and the irony is this all started on today, 6 years ago, which happens to be the anniversary from 1945 of Anne Frank dying in a German concentration camp.
Yeah.
So the most well-known story of neighbors turning on neighbors and reporting this person who we all know who it was, on that anniversary, we went right back down the same path, the anniversary of her death.
Yeah, it is. It's ironic that it is the same day. On this day, too, Broadway went dark in 2020. And we do remember that. And it was very dark. And of course, Oregon, Washington. Well, let's just talk about Oregon, because we were in Oregon during that. Mm-hmm. And you had, remember the counties, you had different levels and you couldn't go certain places. And I remember it took about a couple of weeks. And then I think a lot of us, anyway, those of us who didn't like completely, you know, guzzle down the Kool-Aid, realize something's not right with this. And I remember, you know, going with friends, and we had more than the allotted number of people. But I got to say, the arrows in the grocery stores, think of the lives that were saved, Hunter. Because when you were going down looking for your mustard, if you just went in the right direction, think of the lives you saved. If you didn't, I bet you killed thousands.
Well, the irony of all of it, if you're in a restaurant and you're sitting down, you can take your mask off because COVID won't affect you there. But if you stand up, you better have that mask on. I mean, just the sheer stupidity of it all. We had the wildfires where literally the state of Oregon said, don't go outside, even with a mask on. It will not save you from inhaling the smoke of the wildfire. I'm sitting here going, wait a second. Smoke particles are massively larger than virus particles. And you're telling me that this mask can't stop a smoke particle, but it's going to stop the irony of everything. And all you had to do was stop and slow down and think about it.
But so many people didn't. I was working at the time, and we would have calls with the governor's office and the OHA, and they would come on and have representatives come on. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was on those same calls, and it was like just the propaganda being spewed. And then, of course, you remember the one woman who came out and was giving death statistics, and it was Halloween, and she had clown makeup on, and that has gone forever viral for the state of Oregon. But a key point here, OHA was given the authority to declare an emergency on March 8th. It was declared, giving OHA authority to 2022. These health rules are still on the books, and they can be enacted and turned on anytime. A number of states, I'll just go with neighboring Idaho, have legislation that says that can no longer ever happen. I don't believe Oregon has. Of course,
Oregon,
they want that power.
Yeah.
But a number of red states have said, yeah, we're putting laws on the books so that never happens again. No more mandates. And if you traveled outside the state during that time, the rest of the world was living relatively normally. And then you went back in the dark cloud of Oregon, that boot on your neck in Oregon was there far longer than many other states.
Well, I just sit here and I go, one of the greatest stories I read was a letter to an editor, a post online, whatever it was. And the thing that this did is it created, if you followed all those rules, they elevated you to sanctum. If you didn't follow those rules, you were scum on the bottom of a shoe.
You hated and, grandma and wanted her to die.
Well, this woman, so from the Portland area, and this is during the time when we had the lockdowns. You couldn't leave your county if your county was at a certain level.
Exactly. Okay?
This woman traveled from Salem, Portland area. I don't even know exactly where she did, but she was...
She was from Klamath Falls, I think.
No, she traveled to Klamath Falls.
Oh, okay.
So she literally went, and in her thing, she said, well, I was sitting around doing nothing. We were bored and wanted to kind of see Oregon. I'm going, you're not supposed to. That's what your master said. Your king said that. You can't see Oregon. Okay, number one. She went down to Klamath Falls. They got an Airbnb, and they decided they were going to go to the grocery store and get some food to cook at their Airbnb because it was unsafe to go out to a restaurant. In the grocery store, she noticed children not wearing masks. And she confronted the parents. And she got cursed at and ridiculed because she was being rude to other people that were putting her life in danger. And she couldn't imagine how these people reacted that way to her. Yeah. And I'm going, that's because you came in thinking you were high and mighty. You were godly because you got the shot. You wear your mask. You bend over and take it from the Oregon state government. And these people don't. They believe in freedom. They believe in science. They believe in logic. Weird.
And people like that woman are everywhere, and they will fall for it again. And they will be the same one. Well, they're the same ones out there wagging their fingers at everybody for immigration stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember too, how many people died alone? How many folks, older folks had to, couldn't have family come visit them? How many people had to have those long Q-tips shoved up their noses with God knows what on them? And all the seat, remember the tests? And it's like, did you take the test? Do you have, it's like, stop it. Everybody, it was so shocking how many people just like lined up to go along with this. It was crazy.
Well, you know, one of my very first inclinations that something was really amiss was they released some county statistics on deaths and deaths by COVID. And there was a small county in Texas, I believe, that had 4 deaths from COVID, two of which also suffered from gunshot wounds.
What?
I go, so virtually what you're telling me is you get killed, you get murdered, you die of natural cause, whatever it is, you go in and they find even a speck of COVID in your, on your person, and you're just racked up as a COVID death because they needed those numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And so really, critical thinking just went out. This was really to see who would comply, and it was sad how many, and I know we're related to many that complied, we're friends with many that complied. We dealt with it personally, very up close and personal, and it was not okay. And it's just sort of like everybody kind of wanted to memory hole it, but it's like, we can't memory hole it. We've got to remember, because if you ask questions or contradicted the narrative, boy, it was rough. And I admire and applaud the people who bucked that, because it was hard.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I sit here and go, if we memory hole this, we are going to have it happen again.
Oh, it's already in the works. We know it. We can see this 2.0 coming.
Yeah.
It's using ICE, and it's using immigration, and it's using that right now to set the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think it's going to come from next. We're not quite there yet. And it took a little while for this to ramp up, because it started with 2 weeks, and it was like, okay. And I remember sitting at my dining room table with my little Surface tablet. I'm only going to be here 2 weeks. And then it just went on and on. And again, in blue states, Oregon in particular was one of the worst. We had to live under the tyranny of former Governor Brown, who seemed to be gleeful about it. It was really,
well,
really
horrifying. Well, she did have that cool, shaker mask that...
The Christmas snow globe.
Well, and I sit there and I go, you know, they claim to care so much about the children. And this whole scenario, especially in Oregon, it was so destructive to child development, child education. I had 3 kids in the school system when this happened. One literally got locked out of her kindergarten classroom and didn't return to school until 3rd grade. Another who literally... social life just went straight out the window to, you know, virtually recluse kind of mentality where very few people are being, you know, are even being talked to. And it's just like, when you do that to children under the guise of trying to gain political power and control and clout, I'm just sitting here going, it is sick. And Oregon was the sickest of the group.
And it's evil. And, you know, and you look at the damage that was done, and then the milestones that were taken away, and the damage that was done, especially again to older people who were left alone. People weren't even hugging each other. The damage that was done to the economy and businesses, the places that, I mean, I remember heartbreaking videos of restaurants trying to make it. And then, of course, the boneheaded idea, well, you can't eat inside. So let's bring inside outside. and put it in a tent. It just, all of it was lunacy. And I'm still stunned at the people that just bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, I just, the audacity to believe that we need to shut down all these businesses. But Walmart stays open. Target can stay open.
Yeah. Safeway, the liquor store is open.
The liquor store can be open. And that's state run. I'm surprised that, you know, oh my goodness. McDonald's can stay open. All the big name conglomerates stayed open without any pushback from government officials. But yet, if you wanted to open up your cosmetics shop, or you wanted to open up your hair salon, or if you wanted to open up your mom and pop store, they came after you with a vengeance.
Well, and of course, we remember Glamour Salon downtown. Lindsey Graham, the owner, who lives in Arizona, I think, mm-hmm. now, but trying to open it up. And I mean, I remember seeing the videos of people down there. And oh, my gosh. I did share a post from someone named Tara Lee. And I just want to read the last sentence before we go to break. To all the COVID warriors, I salute you. Those were hard times, and we did our best to educate as many people as we could. To the poor souls who were and still are fooled by government propaganda, not just about COVID, but about anything and everything the media and government tell them, I truly hope your eyes open before it's too late. Mm-hmm. And I echo that sentiment. I truly hope eyes are open before it's too late.
Statement to sit on as we go to break.
Absolutely. So let's take that last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Cozy's New York Deli.
Oh, cool. I saw they put a video out of Mike making a sandwich, and I'm like, I need that sandwich. Anyway, okay. You know, I want to say, because just kind of circle back to having Mark Anderson and those poll numbers, Oregon really has a unique opportunity, not a unique, it's a very good opportunity to really make some solid changes. The city of Salem has a unique opportunity with great candidates running for council and mayor to wrest things back from the precipice, from the abyss, because the doom loop, it's a thing. It's real. And it seems like it's speeding up. Portland Moderate out on X: over the next year, Portland will close 5 to 10 public schools as enrollment has fallen 12%. Meanwhile, Portland State University has seen enrollment drop 23% in just the past few years. Yatina Kotek and Keith Wilson, who's the mayor up there, continue to insist that Portland, Oregon is a thriving, vibrant city. Don't believe your own eyes. Don't believe the numbers. Everything's great. It's wonderful. Everything's fine.
Well, I just sit here and go, okay, those are two different things. The PSU thing, I'm sitting there going, well, maybe people are just getting smarter and realizing that putting yourself in debt for a college isn't worth the you know, money you spend on it when you could do something like a trade school. But the 12% enrollment decline in Portland, and of course, Salem has its own enrollment decline right now.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And the idea that they're closing 5 to 10 schools. And yet there's not this big kick and uproar where if they close a grocery store, they're threatening they need to, you know, open a community store. But I'm going, this is because people are leaving. People are, one, they're taking their children out of public school.
Yes,
but two, they're also fully moving out of the community.
Right. And you've got businesses that just can't do it. I mean, COVID was a one punch. You know, then there's the things not coming back. Downtown has never really recovered. We've talked about Big Pink going for like substantially less. The doom loop is really a thing. It really is a reality. There's a graphic here. It's basically residents and businesses leave Portland. Mm-hmm. So that erodes the tax base, which decreases money for city services, which means crime spikes, potholes don't get fixed, things just get generally gross and dirty. And then there's a decline in public satisfaction. People don't feel safe. They don't want to live there. The schools suck, frankly. Sorry, they do. And people leave. The exodus mm-hmm. continues because the people that have the means to do it will leave.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about what's going on in Portland. I sit here and go, do you remember when they were talking about, you know, the war zone at the ICE facility, how every politician in Oregon ran out with their camera crew midday on a Wednesday to wander around anywhere but the ICE facility in Portland and show you how gorgeous and beautiful it was? And I'm going, the only people that seem to really buy into this are the politicians that need to push their propaganda, mm-hmm. the mainstream news that wants you to believe that we are so wonderful and amazing, and upper middle class white people who never go outside of their little community bubble, aka they never travel into downtown Portland.
Right. Right. And so, you know, you got, and I feel for the people that are of modest means that can't get out. And so there was sort of that tipping point of when a lot of people got out prior to COVID. COVID drove a lot of people out. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, if you travel to any other states, neighboring states, you know, on the West Coast, you saw it's not like this mm-hmm. anywhere else. And so it's going to be interesting to see. There's another article that I've got up here, too, because, you know, we think, well, that's just Portland. It's, you know, the rest of the state's just fine. Well, not really. So here's an article. This is Axios Portland, how Portland's business challenges ripple across Oregon. It, you know, you always say Portland rules the politics mm-hmm. in the state. And it does. And also when it's doom spiral also metastasizes and infects the rest of the state as well. And you're seeing it in Salem, and you're seeing it in Eugene, and you're seeing it in other places. It doesn't just stay there.
Yeah. No. Well, and you look at it this way is why do we need this, you know, multi-billion dollar gas tax? Well, oh, well, because so much of the tax base has left the state. There's not the money. I mean, you know, we talk about the millionaire tax in Washington state. Well, there's only like five billionaires in Oregon at this point. They call right. Oregon home. One of them's uh-huh. Phil Knight. So I'm going.
Who just gave money to a Republican candidate.
That's right. Weird. But I just sit here and go, we're seeing a declining in people coming into this community, children at the schools. It spreads like wildfire. We need to pay the taxes so that, you know, because Portland has killed out their tax base. Well, we don't want that. But if that happens, if it manages to miraculously pass, whether it's in May or November, there will be a mass exodus of people yes. who are going, I can't afford to live here.
Yes. And of course, we talked about our neighbors to the north of us up in Washington passing the millionaires tax. And then all of a sudden that same day, you see that the CEO and all of Starbucks is taking and we're taking everything and we're going. So once the millionaires are gone, people will say, well, it's only for people who make over X $2 million a year. Well, once those people is gone, you know, it's going to go dunk, and it's down to you. And then when you go, it's down even more. And then what are you living in? You're living in Wallace Marine Park as it looks now. That, I mean, where else does it go? That seems to be the trajectory. Nobody wants that.
Well, you can relate this millionaire's tax very simply to you literally have the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks and the potential World Series team of the Seattle Mariners. Everybody that plays that sport in those cities is being taxed because they all make over $1 million a year.
Yeah.
So now what are star athletes going to want to come and play in Seattle where half of their season is taxed at 10% for every penny they make over $1 million?
Nope. And I know we're just about out of time, but I have to mention this because if you do want to get engaged and you want to get engaged with your government and you go and you speak, there's a story and you got to just follow Honey Badger Mom, a 95-year-old Portlander. Just sent a nice letter. She's watched it forever to this council person Dunphy about maybe covering up his tattoos. You'd think she would have like, I don't know. I mean, the way she was treated, the absolute no, mind your own business and keep your small-minded opinions about other people's bodies to yourself.
Weird.
Really? Public servant? Well, to a constituent?
Weird coming from a Democrat who believes it's their job to tell you about, you know, everyone else's bodies.
Yeah, how you're supposed to wear that mask and put that stuff in and inject that stuff into your... Anyway, that's crummy.
Yeah.
Elections matter, people. All right, that's it for us, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We got great shows planned for you next week. Go out and enjoy the day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.